There were indications that people lived in southern Oklahoma long before the white men came, and even before the Aboriginal Indian tribes appeared. There are hints there may have been people around here in the days of the woolly mammoths and migrations through this area when the Incas flourished in Central America. An Oklahoma University geologist found a skeleton near Ardmore that is said to be 3,000 years old. The OU man was Albert Giles, and he made the discovery during a geology trip along Hickory Creek at the edge of the Kreiner Hills southwest of Ardmore. His discovery was hailed as a great find. The skeleton was in an upright position, indicating, the scientists say, that this ancient person may have died in quicksand. All of these historical stories that I use are from Mac McGalliard's reporter's notebook columns that he gave to the Ardmore Public Library so that we could all benefit and enjoy them. They are, every one, very interesting and informative. Longtime lawman James Robert Bob Hutchins was riding the range and branding mavericks in the Arbuckle Mountains for Uncle Billy Washington before the town of Ardmore was established. As soon as he was old enough, he became a U.S. Deputy Marshal under Hanging Judge Parker's Fort Smith Court. In 1915, during the oil boom days, he was elected Police Chief of Ardmore. Garrett was the Carter County Sheriff, and Bud Ballou was his Chief Deputy. While Police Chief, Hutchins captured a rail carload of whiskey and poured it out to flow along the gutters of Ardmore streets. And he was the police chief when the big explosion demolished downtown Ardmore in 1915. Later, he took a job as bodyguard for Jake Hammond, Ardmore oil man and associate of John Ringling in the Ringling Railroad west to the oil patch. And he told in detail of the shooting and death of Hammond in 1920 when he was slated for appointment to the cabinet in Washington. Mac McGalliard's visit with Mrs. Ashley E. Douglas and her grandson, Stephen A. Douglas, Jr., at her longtime home at 708 Douglas about life at Overbrook in Indian Territory days when it was a substantial town. She was a member of the McAllister family for which the old McAllister School and the McAllister Indian Baptist Church were named. She came to Ardmore in 1898 and worked at Mrs. Bomar's millinery shop on Main Street, and in 1903 married Ashley E. Douglas, one of the sons of George B. Douglas, who built the first house other than the 700 Ranch House on the site of Ardmore. She had pictures of the original Douglas log home, interior of Mrs. Bomar's millinery shop, and a good shot of Tucker Tower Cliff at Lake Murray before the lake was built, and when the cliff and canyon area was called Devil's Kitchen and was a popular picnic spot. Mac McGalliard reported from an issue of the Waurika News Democrat about an interesting report on discoveries at Old Spanish Fort on Red River, the earliest trading post and mission in this part of the country. There's real historical significance, Marvin Tong said, in the part played by the Wichita Indians in helping the French defeat the Spanish at this point on the Red River, thereby leaving the area to be developed by the French. Some people involved in the Wichita Indians' research flew over the area and discovered the round outline of an Indian stockade with a square fortress at the side near the river. Investigations on the ground confirmed such a fort, including what apparently was a shallow moat around the stockade. Tong traced the movements of the Wichita Indians from their first known residence in southern Kansas south to Red River, then to the Devil's Canyon area in southwest Oklahoma, and finally to Anadarko. The tribe at one time numbered approximately 6,000. Marie King Garland dug up some history about the point in the Arbuckle Mountains where the Indian Meridian and Baseline intersect. The original marker is a shaft of limestone about 4.5 feet high with the initials IP for initial point carved on the side. A few feet away is a small brass benchmark plate set in the limestone with a cross in the center, marking the exact intersection of the Indian Meridian, which bisects Oklahoma north and south, and the baseline, which bisects the east and west. All of Oklahoma except the Panhandle was surveyed from this point in 6-mile townships running north and south and 6-mile ranges running east and west. The initial point was established by Lieutenant Ehun Noble Darling, a contract surveyor for the U.S. Commissioner of the General Land Office, as a starting point for surveying of the old Chickasaw Nation into 160-acre tracts. Robert H. Love, of the Love family that Love County was named for, urged his nation to avoid participation in the conflict between the North and the South, and when the war ended, was one of those selected to negotiate a new treaty in 1866. He served as Attorney General, Supreme Judge, and County Judge of Pickens County. Thomas Caldwell Stuart Boyd, son of Nancy Mahota Love and James Boyd, was named for the Presbyterian missionary who baptized him in Mississippi and explains his signature, Thomas C.S. Boyd. He was a nephew of Robert H. Love. He also served as county judge of Pickens County, was a member of the convention in 1867, where he was appointed by Governor Cyrus Harris to attend to the printing of the Constitution and bylaws of the Chickasaw Nation. He was supreme judge in 1870. The Love family, for which Love County was named, extends back to Revolutionary War days and was prominent in affairs of Pickens County of the Chickasaw Nation in Indian Territory days. During the American Revolution, Thomas Love, the Loyalist, fled to the friendly Chickasaws and married into that tribe. At the time of the removal, which began in the 1830s, his children and second wife came west, settling in various parts of the new Indian Territory. In the town of Burneyville is a family graveyard, with one stone bearing this inscription, "Farewell, Mahota Love, died September the 25th, 1873, age 82 years. She was Homahota, the second wife of Thomas Love, and was affectionately called Granny Hody. When Oklahoma became a state, part of Pickens County, Chickasaw Nation, was carved to form a new county, Love County, in honor of this prominent Love family. Oil seepages, also called sulfur springs, and medicine springs were found in many places in the Chickasaw Nation and played a part in the exploration for oil. When these springs occurred near streams, they would be visited by campers from as far away as Arkansas and Texas, who believed the water and oil had medicinal properties. An ad appeared in the Dallas Herald Wednesday, September the 15th, 1858. Oil Springs Hotel, change of owners. Robert Love and Thomas C.S. Boyd have bought out Robert Wilson at the Oil Springs. We intend to keep a well-furnished house for the purpose of accommodating all that may give us a call. The table will be furnished with the best the country can afford for the sick and the well, and every effort will be made to please all. Campers can be furnished any kind of meats that they may want. Plenty of forage will be kept on hand. This spot was believed to be about 1.5 miles west of Marietta. Once upon a time, there was a fort 8 miles west of Davis beside State Highway 7, where the Indian Meridian Road runs straight to divide Oklahoma into east and west. It's Fort Arbuckle. It was said the reason for its location was a big spring of good water for the men and the horses. Several families live in homes built on foundations of the Army buildings, according to Mac McGalliard's Reporter's Notebook column. Mrs. Katie Grant Allen had a map of the fort showing the location of the original buildings. The fort was a stop on the stagecoach line between Fort Sill to the west and Boggy Depot to the east. Mail also was carried by horseback north from Gainesville to Lone Grove and north across the mountains to Fort Arbuckle and to Whitebead Hill on the Washita River, west of the present Pauls Valley. The Army abandoned the fort in 1870, and Tom Grant secured the site and surrounding farm and ranch lands and operated a post office, store, and stage station there. Mac McGalliard reported in his Reporter's Notebook column about a meeting of pioneers and descendants from Fort Arbuckle one Sunday afternoon. One story is about Munford Johnson, whose story was told by his grandson, Neil Johnson, in the book The Chickasaw Rancher. He was reared at Fort Arbuckle and got his start in ranching by rounding up wild cattle in the Arbuckle Mountains in the 1850s. Mrs. Pearl Slaughter reported her family moved to the fort in 1887, and her father, Uncle Billy Myers, rented the land from Tom Grant and farmed for several years and then put in a store. George Shirk, the then president of the Oklahoma Historical Society and former mayor of Oklahoma City, created a sensation that day by driving up in his beautifully restored 1926 model Rolls-Royce. Mrs. Katie Grant Allen expressed the spirit of the meeting when she told the group, "I look out across the old parade ground and wonder who lived here in the past and what they did." In 1914, William Lewis Brooks perfected a gas stove for the burning of newly available natural gas. This was a great step forward in convenience and cleanliness for heating homes and businesses. The company was located at 17 3rd Northeast in Ardmore. The stove accomplished complete combustion of gas, burned without odor, smoke, or fumes, and used a minimum of gas. Mr. Brooks made arrangements with Wilson Newman, a sheet metal business owner, to manufacture the stove. In 1914, 8 stoves were produced. By 1925, 13,000 were produced annually. As gas became more prominent nationwide, larger industry began the development and manufacture of similar products, and the company gradually phased out. Nevertheless, it was no doubt the pattern for many such products and was an important addition to the better living by an astute Ardmore inventor. Ralph Sherhoff sent a clipping from an issue of a Wichita, Kansas paper to Mac McGalliard for his reporter's notebook column, telling of some war lore from Berwyn, now Gene Autry, in Indian Territory days. Quoting a Cherokee Indian by the name of F. Tom Peshaw, then living at Parsons, Kansas, but who lived in Berwyn in the 1890s. He said two merchants, partners, had a large sign on their Berwyn store reading, "Joseph I. Ketchum and David U. Cheatham, General Merchandise." But the customers were dubious of Ketchum and Cheatham, and so the partners went to court and got their names changed. The Indians said the four most important business establishments in Berwyn in 1896 were the Santa Fe Depot, Livery Stable, Grist Mill, and Blacksmith Shop. He related seeing peddlers rent out all the rigs at the Livery Stable to go out into the rural communities to sell clothing, utensils, unroasted coffee, shoes, tobacco, and other things. The peddlers came into Berwyn on the train, of course, which was the best way to get from here to yonder in those days. The National Cowboy Hall of Fame's Rodeo Historical Society will posthumously induct the late Jim Eskew Jr. into the Rodeo Hall of Fame in December this year. The Society honors four of its own, two living and two deceased, selected by members as outstanding leaders of the profession. Jr., as he was generally known, picked up a rope as soon as he was able to walk and never put it down for long until his death in 1977. He specialized in trick and fancy roping, and being 80% ambidextrous, developed a repertoire that included rope tricks that only he could perform. He was called the finest acrobatic trick roper that ever lived. 9 of the world's best ropers met at the Cowboy Hall of Fame for 2 days of competition. When the contest was over, one of the ropers declared, "Jim started where the rest of us left off." Buck and Dutchie Estes were the husband and wife team of keepers at Mountain Lake in the Arbuckles north of Woodford. Mac McGalliard liked to visit with them and listen to them tell of their experiences. They seemed to compete in playing practical jokes on each other. One time they were going swimming in the farm pond. She had on a new flowery bathing suit but was afraid of the deep water. Buck said she wouldn't even wade in deeper than her ankles. He caught her unawares, grabbed her by her feet, and dragged her across the deep water with her head under most of the way. She waded out on the other shore, boiling mad. Buck swam away from her vows of revenge. The pond was in a mountain pasture, and the shore was covered with rocks. Dutchie started throwing rocks. Buck would dive for safety, but every time he surfaced for air, she let go with another rock. She relented just before he drowned. Buck said those rocks hitting his head was the reason he was bald. It sounds like fun reading about it, but a little too rough for me. Bud Ballou was right-hand deputy for Buck Garrett, sheriff of Carter County, from 1911 to early 1922. According to a letter from John T. Spears that appeared in Mac McGalliard's reporter's notebook column, I quote, "Bud was a small rancher and farmer before becoming a deputy sheriff and had quite a lot of friends in the Lone Grove community and was considered dependable and very loyal and would do most anything for a friend. Bud served when the oil fields in the western part of Carter County came in and they were plenty rough. That was Bud's territory to work, and while he was a deputy, he was accused of killing several men. I believe it was six or seven. When he went to arrest them, they were plenty tough. He was tried in the courts for every one and never was convicted, but was always acquitted by the jury. There were two classes of people, the great majority of which were always for Buck Garrett and Bud Ballou in the elections. These were the businessmen of Ardmore and the real poor people of the county. Buck and Bud helped the poor people a lot."